the browser, vice downloading the Zoom software. The slides about the draft RFP have also been posted to betasam.gov, for which you received an email, so you can access them that way if needed. Your phones have been manually muted by our Zoom meeting operator. Over the past couple of weeks, I'm sure you've learned, as we have, about the number of children, types of pets, in-laws, and other variable interests in the homes of your colleagues. While we encourage all prospective satellite builders in your home to follow along with today's presentation, we've muted your phones so that we don't accidentally share that experience with this large group. Due to the large number of participants, you will not be able to use the Zoom chat feature, nor will we be taking questions live over the phone. So please remain on mute throughout. I want to note that we've updated our agenda slightly. We received many questions ahead of time in writing, more than we'd be able to answer in the time previously allotted for our panel discussion. So we're going to shift to responding in writing to the questions we received instead of holding a panel by phone during today's event. We hope the information presented by our speakers today will also address many of the questions we received. This adjustment will give you some of your time back and ensure that you receive written responses to your questions, which we believe may be more useful as you plan. Should you have outstanding questions at the conclusion of Industry Day, we will provide the email box where you can submit those questions for a written response. I am now pleased to turn the line over to SDA's director, Dr. Derek Tournier, for a few words and an introduction of our first speaker.
Thank you all for coming and dialing in today. I know it's early for you, especially in the West, and I really wish we all could have met at the symposium. But this is truly a testimony to the Semper Citius motto for SDA and our schedule-driven mentality. And I really appreciate all of you for supporting us in that. It's, you know, what this virus and this pandemic has taught is that it's all the more reason for the mission of SDA. The world is a scary place. There are a lot of threats out there, and we really need to ensure that we can protect and project Western values into the future and ensure an American way of life. And so with that, I'd like to introduce my boss and longtime proliferated LEO advocate, the Undersecretary of Defense for Research and Engineering and former NASA Administrator, the Honorable Dr. Mike Crippen. Dr. Crippen may be muted. If you can hear me, I think you need to type *6 into your phone to unmute yourself. I know he was on because he said he could hear the announcements. All right. Well, with that, we will we'll come back to you, Dr. Griffin, when we get the technical challenges worked out. We have another keynote speaker, and this is Colonel Curtis Hernandez. I'm very happy to introduce. He is the director of the National Security Space Policy. Colonel Hernandez advises the National Space Council on defense implications of emerging policy and current space operations. Throughout his Air Force career, he has held a variety of positions focused on space command and control, most recently as the commander of the 30th Space Operations Group at Vandenberg. Colonel Hernandez joins us today to offer some perspective from the national level. Over to you, Colonel.
Thank you, Dr. Tournier. I hope everybody can hear me. If you could confirm before I get started.
Copy.
Fantastic. Well, good morning to all, and thank you, Dr. Tournier and Dr. Griffin, for your leadership and persistence during the social distancing directives. And thank you to those who are online this morning for your interest in participating in this industry day. I'm encouraged to see the wide participation of those who are curious about new acquisition models presented by SDA, those who are drawn to opportunities to innovate, and those who see the utility and benefit of rapid spiral development to deliver capabilities that answer and defeat threats to the nation's interests in space. While many of us would have met in person in beautiful Colorado Springs, the need and responsibility to maintain social distancing to defeat the spread of COVID-19 mandated that all of us meet here online. I want to thank you for your patience while participating in this non-traditional forum today. I want to extend my gratitude to those who are contributing to the defeat of COVID-19, either by donation retooling to provide medical supplies, or are maintaining a workforce in the midst of the economic upheaval. And finally, my wishes for a rapid recovery to any of your family members, coworkers, or friends who may be suffering from this illness right now. As mentioned, my name is Colonel Curtis Hernandez, United States Space Force, and I am currently the Director of National Security Space Policy for the National Space Council. In this role, I advise the administration on policy implications to warfighting in space, coordinate developing policy amongst the interagency, and determine its potential impact to national security, commercial, or civil space policy, and work hand-in-hand with my colleagues on the National Security Council to implement the President's determination to maintain America's dominance in space. Prior to this assignment, I was the 30th Operations Group Commander at Vandenberg Air Force Base, California, overseeing over 20 launch campaigns and initiating a modernization effort to take the Western Range from a 1980 to a 2020 technology baseline. Informing that effort were my 18 years in the space control mission area, where rapid prototyping, innovative problem solving, and immediate deployment of good enough technology led to multiple space operations successes in Operations Iraqi and Enduring Freedom. In my remarks today, I will draw on those experiences to emphasize the potential of the model SBA is pursuing while inviting your partnership in defending the nation. Interestingly, as I was preparing for my remarks this morning, I was pondering how the SBA team would coordinate the logistics for this morning and how we as participants would adjust to this venue, which would customarily have been in person. The more I thought about it, in my mind, this event is a real-time demonstration of a key objective of the 2018 National Defense Strategy, delivering a capability, some would say performance, at the speed of relevance. The SBA team did not allow the constraint of social distancing to prevent this event from taking place. Instead, they integrated an existing technology, in this case Zoom, and adapted it to achieve the objective they set before them, that is hosting this industry day. There were no new technologies developed, no travel money expended, no initiation of a large tech demonstration to prove this meeting could be convened, only a mindset to adapt available technology and apply it to our objective here today. While loosely applied to this industry day event, the 2018 National Defense Strategy objective of reforming for greater performance and affordability is what brings us all here together today. In many ways, this event and the objective to launch and test the working space transport layer by fourth quarter FY22 mandate that we challenge the comfort of the familiar. Our familiar acquisition process would necessitate proving the technology before launch. Our familiar process would be forgiving of an extended deployment timeline to deliver a perfect product. Our familiar process would imply the invention of new technology to meet the requirement, and our familiar process would lock us into a rigid solution for a prolonged time frame. However, times have changed, and space is now a warfighting domain with adversaries who are exploiting our comfort with the familiar to their advantage. Recognizing this external threat and sensing and internal complacency, President Trump in the 2018 National Space Strategy stressed the necessity to partner closely with private industry to transform to more resilient space architectures. He directed the nation to accelerate this transformation to enhance resilience, defenses, and our ability to reconstitute impaired capabilities. In studying the scope of SBA's proposed methodology to deliver the nation an alternative to familiar architectures, it's clear that proliferation and spiral building can deliver on the President's directive. That said, it's important to understand where industry fits in this strategy. Recognizing that risk to our nation from new technologies such as hypersonic weapons and the vulnerability of our current space architecture increases daily as competing states demonstrate new and potentially offensive capabilities, necessitates that we as a nation must now go faster, think bigger, and deliver better to maintain our leadership in space. Going faster to innovatively deliver a proliferated LEO transport layer demands partnering between government and industry. In watching the coverage of private industry's response to COVID-19 medical supply needs, I am convinced that focused partnering between the government and industry can meet the two-year objective to deliver Tranche Zero of this architecture. In this crisis, the President has repeatedly demonstrated his confidence in American industry to deliver what the nation needs. The nation can accomplish anything it sets out to achieve, but we must do so with focus that is flexible to adapt to inputs we learn through development of this initial transport layer tranche. So to go faster, the government will leverage the speed and innovation of commercial industry. but this is only one component of the partnership SBA is proposing and what we as a nation need. To that end, we must think bigger. The thinking required must, for success, necessitates an open dialogue between industry and government. While I am certain that industry can deliver the innovation required, there may be components, technologies, or supply chains that are either impractical to sustain, inefficient to develop, or challenging to deliver at the speeds of requirement. It's fundamental that we not allow this initiative to assume industry will provide 100% of the answers here. Industry's honest and critical feedback is imperative to inform the government as to what those challenges are. For the spiral building to be successful, the feedback loop cannot rely solely on industry to solve. Government resources may need to be applied to shore up supply chains, maintain production lines, or deliver one-off solutions that are beyond the resources of private industry. With that framework in place, I have confidence Tranche 1 will be exponentially better than Tranche 0 and will meet the desired characteristics of complicating a potential enemy targeting and cause them to pause and decide, not today. Finally, the strategy behind SBA's architectural concept has a high potential for success when we consider how it may work in concert with the emerging United States Space Force. The demonstration of this capability and its importance to defending the nation from attack while being resilient in space offer a rapid win and bold statement as the new force is established. However, as previously stated, the future of successful spiral filling must incorporate a vital feedback mechanism between the operational force, the acquisition teams, and industry. Building in relationship opportunities for a dynamic and sustained feedback loop will be fundamental to improving how this capability is operated, improved, and transformed. We must also ensure that future spirals consider emerging threats and that each generation or tranche has the inherent capability to adapt to a rapidly evolving threat environment. In harkening back to the National Defense Strategy, the nation is looking to prioritize speed of delivery, continuous adaptation, and frequent modular upgrades. The success of this initial tranche will validate our defense strategy, provide a resilient transport layer, and establish the foundation for a future architecture that will defend the nation from a variety of threats. I thank you again for your participation this morning, your patience as we adapt to this new dynamic of social distancing, and I'm excited for the future potential and game-changing impact your innovation can provide for the defense of the nation. Dr. Turner, back over to you.
Thank you, Colonel. Now that my pay has been docked for not being able to unmute my boss, I'd like to reintroduce the Honorable Mike Griffin. Dr. Griffin, over to you.
So let me start with a comm check. Can you hear me now?
Copy. Yes, sir.
Okay. So I think cycling the unmute function on your end reset whatever bit was inadvertently set. So thank you. I'm happy to follow Colonel Hernandez. That was a really good and timely discussion, especially the point about adapting to circumstances. That's what we do best in this country. I am glad to have the opportunity to talk to you guys, all of you this morning. And I know hundreds of you are out there, across the land listening to this. Derek introduced me earlier by saying that I've been a proliferated LEO advocate for a long time. That is true. He and I were chatting yesterday, and I was saying that my professional assessment and advocacy for the value of a proliferated LEO layer goes back almost 35 years to my time in the Strategic Defense Initiative Organization, SDIO, when we were looking at brilliant pebbles and then later brilliant eyes and those sorts of architectures. I was then and am now convinced of their value. Beyond that, though, let me be clear. I am not just an advocate for proliferated LEO. I am a very strong advocate for proliferated space capability by the United States and its allies to provide the kind of resilience we have to deal with adversaries that I'm sure most of you know because you read many of the same intelligence reports I read. Our adversaries are coming after us. And our strategy so far has been to provide the kind of an architecture that I would have provided if I knew no one is coming after us, but they are. And so our space strategy today, our reliance on a few very sophisticated key assets to deliver the greatest capability the world has ever seen, that strategy is like parking battleships at Pearl Harbor on December 6th of 1941. A day later, it was shown to be flawed, and we have since followed other strategies in the maritime domain. We need to apply the same thinking to the space domain. So it's about proliferation, and yes, it's about proliferation in low Earth orbit, but it's not about proliferation only in low Earth orbit. Critical to all of this, I think, is the fact that Space Development Agency was established by the acting Secretary of Defense, Pat Shanahan, outside of the conventional DoD legacy acquisition construct, loosely DoD 5000, as we all know and love it. That may be the right mechanism to acquire new aircraft carriers or Columbia-class submarines or the next-generation fighter or whatever. It's not the mechanism that we in the government need to use in order to design, develop, and deploy a new threat-driven space architecture at a speed comparable to the threat that we face. The threat that we face is evolving on timescales of a few years, not the decade and a half, when we're lucky, that legacy acquisition methods will provide for us. You all know these numbers. I don't need to repeat them, but it is a fact that we are doing well when we can deploy a new system in 15 years. That's not going to keep us ahead of our adversaries in space. So the U.S. Space Force is standing up, as I think most of you know from my personal history. That's something that as a space guy and a space manager and leader for some decades now, development of the Space Force is something I could not welcome more strongly. We look forward to having Space Development Agency join the Space Force once the startup transients are ironed out. But as Colonel Hernandez pointed out, that will the date for that is now set at October of 22, according to our defense planning guidance. And that will give us time in Space Development Agency to demonstrate what happens when you provide an unencumbered focus on delivering threat-driven capability. We intend to apply commercial small satellite manufacturing methods to meet DoD needs. Notice I'm parsing that quite carefully. A purely commercial solution is very unlikely to meet the legitimate needs that DoD has. But legacy methods of building equipment to meet DoD needs will have legacy timescales, and we can't tolerate that. So we have to find a way to blend commercial manufacturing approaches to build the things that DoD needs. And we will do that under Dr. Tournier's leadership. I'm convinced of it. This is what I mean when I talk in public, and Derek, when he talks in public, this is what we mean when we say that SDA, Space Development Agency, is charged with breaking new ground to address Congress's requirement for acquisition reform. This is where reform lies, applying industry best practices, building the unique items that DoD has to have to deal with the threat. The first task we have in SDA is the development of what we've called the transport layer, meaning the communications transport layer. It's the absolute cornerstone, a much overworked term, but applicable in this case. It is the cornerstone of a resilient national defense space architecture, because without communications, as we saw a few moments ago when the system was unable to unmute me, communications architecture controls everything else. If we can't talk to one another, if we can't communicate the data that we have to have, then we simply can't fight. We can't deal with aggressors. So that's the core SDA responsibility. The development of the architecture to accomplish that is the core SDA responsibility, and it is, again, the foundation block, the cornerstone of a truly resilient national defense space architecture. We could say, I am tempted to say, given my own desires, that the tracking layer, to be able to find, fix, track, and target hypersonic threats that are much dimmer than the ballistic missile threats we've had to deal with in the past, and dim upper stages, we could say that that would be considered the priority. But without a way to get the data from the sensors where they are to the shooters where they are, without a way to do the battle management and fire control that the communications layer implies, being able to find the targets is really of no value. So the priority order is communications and then tracking, and then after that, the many other functions that the Space Development Agency architecture will put in place. I've probably said enough. Some of you are thinking he's already said too much. You would be right. So I will end here. I'm told we have over 300 participants at today's Industry Day. We need you, or the nation simply will not succeed with what we're trying to do here. Thanks again for attending, and I'll turn it back over to Derek.
Thank you, sir. That's exactly right. So today we're going to talk about the transport layer, data transport layer, so we could figure out a way to do comm where we don't have to worry about those meeting issues. Now, I appreciate the kind words that you said to set this up, and Colonel Hernandez, spot on, that is our mission, is to take existing technology and get it out there as soon as possible to meet a capability gap, just like we're doing today. And with that, I'd like to give a little bit of an overview. A lot of you have probably heard this before, but I want to make sure that everyone that's on the line now knows exactly where transport fits in and how Space Development Agency fits in with the broader community. And so that's what I'd like to talk about. Next slide, please. So one of the key aspects that I always like to reference when I talk about Space Development Agency is Clayton Christensen's book, The Innovator's Dilemma. In that, he spells out specifically that you cannot have an entity that is a large organization that is designed to meet the needs of a mainline customer also be the entity that you expect to do a large disruption. And the reason you can't do that is not because there's not a lot of smart people or good technical engineering expertise in that large organization, but the fact is that large organization exists and has the processes and values in place to answer the needs of that main customer. In other words, they listen and respond to that main customer. That is exactly what they do, and that's exactly how they keep the lights on. And in Clayton's book, he goes through several examples of how this has worked throughout history and throughout the past, and how it can continue to work going forward. And what he says is you really need an entity that is separate and independent, that has its own processes and values in place to focus on either a new disruption in technology or in processes that enables them to focus on something that originally could be a much smaller market that would be ignored by a larger entity. However, over time, they can develop that and eventually disrupt the larger organizations. And in his book, he goes through a lot of different examples. And in my past experiences, I was at Excellus, which was the former Kodak group, so I was able to talk to a lot of those folks about what happened with the digital revolution, and this process holds. So in the department, basically you have a group that is answering that call of providing the capabilities that we need to fight the war now and to fight the war in the immediate near future. And that, you could say, that is the Space and Missile Center, right? They are the ones that are developing the capabilities that the customer, U.S. Space Command, needs to be able to fight the battles. However, they do a great job, and that they have the processes and values in place to make sure that they can deliver and answer the needs of U.S. Space Command. But then there is no one that is looking at this disruptive way to do new architectures that are not incremental improvements on the way we do things today. That's where the Space Development Agency comes in. The Space Development Agency is set up to focus on two main pillars that set us apart, and that is proliferation, number one, and spiral development, number two. And harnessing that capability to be able to get things up there on schedule rapidly with a spiral development approach where you actually fly things and then make adjustments and do not hope to get the 100% solution in the current spiral, but you plan on that in the next tranche is the terminology we use. That's the Space Development Agency's mission, and that's how we fit into the Department of Defense. Next slide. So another question is, if that's how we fit in being this disruption, how do we fit in with the other organizations out there that are trying to do disruption as well? DARPA immediately comes to mind, as does the Space Rapid Capabilities Office, and then also the labs, AFRL, et cetera. I explain this the following way. I say that those three entities are really designed with maturing technology. Once they mature that technology, they demonstrate that technology has military utility. And depending on where that technology starts, when you start the maturation, tells you essentially whether or not you're going to start with the research labs, DARPA, or Space RCO. Obviously, if it's a real low technology readiness level, that's something developed by the lab. In the middle is DARPA. And then if it's more mature, it's usually Space RCO. SDA is not following that model. SDA is not doing technology development to show military utility. SDA is taking technology that is already available, just like Colonel Hernandez said, technology that's readily available, and applying that in a new architecture construct to show military utility. So the architecture construct that we use are those based on those pillars, proliferation and then the spiral development approach, where you get the solution you have in hand on orbit as rapidly as possible, experiment, learn from it, and then do a new tranche. So that's how the two, with the tech development organizations and the architecture development organization, Space Development Agency, are intertwined and interlinked, and that in essence sets the lanes in the road. Next slide. So for the mission of Space Development Agency, we're really focused on two priorities immediately. And those priorities are the ability to do beyond line of sight targeting for time-sensitive ground and maritime targets. So we are not planning on building out all of the satellites to do the ISR portion of this mission, but we are planning on providing that backbone to give you that low latency comm so that you can go from sensor to shooter in a timeline that matches the movement of the target. The second priority is the advanced missile detection for hypersonic glide vehicles and dim upper stages. And it's the same type of problem. So you need a sensing system, and then you need to be able to have a low latency comm network that can get those data directly to a weapons platform in a timeline that is necessary so you can close the kill chain. And that's really what Space Development Agency is focused on. So we're focused on making sure that we don't do a lot of new technology development, but we do capability fielding as rapidly as possible. And we do it, we're going to work that in these two-year spirals, two-year tranches, for the same reason. We want to stay focused on speed, just like our low-latency comm network needs to be focused on speed to be able to close these kill chains. our technology fielding needs to be focused on speed so that we can get ahead of new enemy and adversary developments. So the next slide talks about how we're planning on building out that architecture to do that. What I like, I really like the icon in the bottom right-hand portion of this chart. Reasonable people disagree with me and they tell me that it's not good, but I like it. I think it tells the story of how we fit together. So if you look at that icon, you'll see that transport box, that's the gray box in there, and that is really the backbone. That's the low latency comm network. That's what ties everything together. And that's what we're really focused on today, is talking about transport and how that works. Now, plugging into transport, you have the three sensing layers off to the right there: tracking, custody, and deterrence. So those sensing layers, tracking, that is essentially the OPIR mission, to be able to give you the detection and track quality information for advanced missile threats. So they detect it, send it to transport where it can be disseminated to weapon systems. Custody, that is the beyond line of sight targeting capability. That's your ISR capability. And that we're working with mission partners to build out those satellites and those sensing networks, and also working with commercial industry so that they can do that sensing and then plug it into our transport node so that we can get those data directly to a weapon system. Deterrence is the sensing system for space situational awareness. We're primarily focused on looking at geo to cislunar space, and that is to be able so that we can detect things that may be going around the moon in different threat scenarios so that we can ensure that we maintain open lines of communication and travel from geo to the moon and ensure that there are no threats in that area. Now you'll see within transport there is that dark blue nav box. That means that the transport satellites will be able to get their own position, navigation, and timing on the constellation. Now because of that, and because of the fact that they have a way to get comm links back down to the users on the ground, we feel that you can actually use that to be an alternative PNT source that's not a broadcast source like GPS, but it's a source that if someone is on that comm network for transport, they can use that to also get PNT, much like an Iridium user who is tied into that Iridium messaging network can use that Iridium messaging line to get PNT. Now the light blue box around all of those different functionalities we have labeled as battle management. That is, in essence, the smarts that ties all this together to enable this to work as one cohesive architecture. So that is the fusion of the data from both the tracking and custody layers, if you will, fuse those to give you an advanced targeting solution. It also does network management to allow you to know what systems have what sensors and what comm payloads so that you can do ad hoc network routing as you build out this architecture. And that also is the processing platform that will host any of the advanced algorithms to be able to do autonomy or advanced data fusion and, if you will, artificial intelligence or machine learning to do automatic target recognition. That's all hosted on this battle management layer. The majority of the processing that's actually doing that battle management processing will be hosted on transport satellites. That's the vision we have as part of this architecture. And then the green box on the bottom, that is support. So this obviously is going to take a lot of different ways to launch these capabilities in orbit, and then different ways to operate them on the ground and get the data to and from user equipment. Now the majority of the user equipment that we are talking about here is going to go over existing data links. So you'll hear us talk a lot about Link 16 and how we would use that. That the vision of this architecture is that the fire control solutions weapon systems we talk to, we're going to talk to them over existing tactical data links. We do not plan on fielding any new user equipment. That's the baseline of the architecture for the Space Development Agency. And our mission is to orchestrate the development and fielding of this architecture, which is the National Defense Space Architecture. Next slide. talk for a little bit about the timeline on when we plan on fielding these capabilities. So as I mentioned, we're in this spiral development or this tranche model where every 2 years we put up new capabilities. So the first one is what we're in now, and this is our risk reduction demonstration phase. And this is the, we're going to do some demos basically, where we're going to fly a few pairs of satellites that do optical comlink demos between each other and then also between the ground to demonstrate that capability. As we move forward, move down the line here in tracking, we're going to do demonstrations where we do some experiments where we make sure that we understand what is necessary to be able to do the clutter management for our wide field of view and medium field of view systems to be able to actually perform the tracking mission. And then on our custody and navigation and deterrence, all of that is going to focus on what we can do on the ground to do some demonstrations that we can actually do data fusion and proper modeling. Tranche zero, this is our warfighter immersion tranche. This is the tranche where we have enough capability up there to demonstrate the utility of a proliferated architecture and start to actually learn how we would do con ops or develop tactics, techniques, and procedures that the warfighters would use to utilize the data once it comes in from this capability. So that means for transport, we'll have dozens of satellites. You'll hear us talk about 20 satellites up at the end for tranche zero. And that will allow us to be able to show that this mesh network can work in principle. And for tracking, we plan on having on the order of 10 tracking satellites up there to demonstrate that we can do advanced missile tracking and then get those data to the transport layer for dissemination. As far as battle management, you'll hear a lot more about details in battle management and what we plan on doing there, but we plan on doing those demonstrations for Tranche Zero on the ground to show on flight hardware, flight-like hardware, but do it on the ground so that it could be flown in space for later tranches. Tranche one, that's when we actually have initial capability that could support a warfight. So that's where we have enough satellites on orbit. So we'll have hundreds of satellites on orbit at the end of FY24. So we'll be able to have persistence over a given region, both for our low latency comm, for our persistence OPIR for tracking, and then also working with mission partners to be able to give that kind of persistence for the custody mission, for the beyond line of sight targeting. Then we'll also be able to do battle management on board the Tranche 1 satellites. And then Tranche 2 and moving forward, that's when we would be able to have full global coverage. So next slide. So these are the ways that you can work with SDA moving forward. Obviously, the one we're talking about today is the transport RFP for our Tranche Zero. That's what we have the draft RFP out now, and that's what we plan on soliciting for. We hope to get the actual RFP out on the street based on your comments and feedback on May 1st, so that we can quickly turn that contract on and start to build out these capabilities. The other aspects we have there is we have this STEC BAA that is essentially out there so that we can, if you have ideas to come in any ways we can do any of these layers or any of these capabilities, that is the BAA we have for that. We have several RFIs that we've been using to help shape some of these RFPs going forward. All right, with that, I'd like to thank you all again for your attention and tuning in today, and I'll turn this over to Mr. Tim Boudreau, who will talk about the details of the transport RFP.
Good morning. I'd like to do a sound check first, please.
You are good, Mr. Boudreau. We can hear you.
Thank you. Good morning. On behalf of the Office of the Secretary of Defense Research and Engineering, Dr. Griffin, and Dr. Tanier, the SDA Director, I am pleased to welcome you all to SDA's industry day in the release of the draft RFP for SDA's transport layer. Before we get started, though, I'd like to go through some commentary items that I think will benefit us all. First of all, SDA is leveraging very heavily on DARPA's Blackjack program, both in the proof of concept and drawing down technical risk. Additionally, the SDA is aligned very closely with AFRL in a number of areas to include optical inter-satellite links and their development and the Link 16 XDI program. Second of all, this briefing is structured to align with the draft RFP. Language in the draft RFP takes precedence. In some areas, there is an attempt to provide higher fidelity information, or at least to provide some insight into our thought processes. Number three, which I think is the most important comment of the day, as with any draft RFP, we strive to make it better. The primary goals of the draft RFP are to ensure that any ambiguities are addressed, proposers have an opportunity to address potential disconnects, and the government is afforded the opportunity to release an RFP which not only serves in the best interest of the government, but promotes opportunities within industry to develop the best system possible in consideration of cost and schedule constraints. Number four, unfortunately, we don't all speak the same language. Engineers can't articulate between themselves. It reminds us all of those management training classes we attend to remind us all that engineers are people too. But help us speak your language. If you read something in the draft RFP that needs to be articulated, please let us know. We will be posting those responses. Number five, throughout the past year, the SDA has been approached with a number of technologies which have the potential to revolutionize the communications industry. And while there are a small business section within the draft RFP, the SDA encourages teaming relationships to be used to the maximum extent possible. Number six, at the end of fiscal year 22, the SDA's goal is to launch a transport system that will provide the DoD new and unique capabilities while leveraging state-of-the-art technologies. This capability will begin to, quote, define and monitor the department's future space architecture and will accelerate the development and fielding of new space capabilities. And last but not least, it is the SDA's goal to leverage satellite production off commercial production lines and achieve economies of scale. Next slide, please. So we have a rather lengthy discussion ahead, but I do want to give you some perspective of our arrangements this morning. To baseline everyone's approach to this draft RFP, I will take the time to give a brief introduction into our architecture and to our CONOPS. Following that, there have been a number of discussions with respect to how SDA, FNC cubed, and JADC square aligns, and I want to give a brief discussion on that. Following that, we will get into the draft RFP. Okay, the discussion today is aligned to follow the RFP. Currently, we are scheduled to take a 15-minute break after launch, and then we'll reconvene and wrap everything up. Next slide, please. And next slide. Next slide, please. So we'll be discussing the architecture and CONOPS. And next slide, please. So for the next few slides, I want to give everyone a better perspective of how the layers synchronize. I want to take the master architecture slide and decompose it into the various SDA layers. While this RFP primarily addresses the requirement to design, build, launch, and test the transport tranche zero layer, there are other functionalities which are going to be inherent to the system being delivered. As it has already been stated, the transport layer will serve as the backbone of the architecture by providing assured, resilient, low latency, military data, and connectivity worldwide to a full range of warfighter applications. The other layers of the National Defense Space Architecture that have a synergistic relationship with the transport layer are highlighted in the chart. And while Dr. Tenier has already highlighted these, I want to emphasize these again. The tracking layer. This is designed to provide global indications, warning, tracking, and targeting of advanced missile threats to include hypersonic missile systems. The battle management layer. This is designed to provide architecture tasking, mission command and control, and data dissemination to support time-sensitive kill chain closures at campaign scales. The next layer is the custody layer. It's designed to provide 24/7 all-weather custody of time-sensitive left-of-launch service mobile targets, for example, to support targeting for mobile missiles or high-value targets. The next is the navigation layer. This is designed to provide alternative position, navigation, and timing for GPS-denied environments. And last but not least, but very important, is the support layer. This is to enable ground and launch segments to support a responsive space architecture. Tranche Zero Transport Layer consists of a space segment and a predominantly government-provided ground segment. The space segment is nominally a heterogeneous constellation of 20 space vehicles. The ground segment consists of a space operations center located at Boston Point, with ground terminals located there and in other yet-to-be-determined locations. The constellation, and this will be emphasized later in the brief, consists of two types of space vehicles. Group A space vehicles, which will provide a full networking infrastructure to link the entire constellation, and Group B space vehicles, which support in-plane crosslinks and mission communications through IBS and Link 16. The space vehicles are in two planes at an altitude of 1,000 kilometers and between 80 and 100 degrees inclination. Note that as the constellation build-out likely requires nodal precession, 90-degree inclinations is undesirable. Group A is evenly spaced in plane to allow for continuous contact with the ground and bidirectional cross-linking around the ring. Group B is clumped to allow for periods of continuous coverage of the theater for test and experimentation. Table 6 in your draft RFP provides the details of this nominal constellation. Next slide, please. So let's start the decomposition. The primary goal of the transport layer is to demonstrate low latency data transfer between disparate parts of the globe. Data can be uploaded from the support layer either through RF or optical and is transmitted through the transport layer to an in location that is not accessible via traditional ground links. Using a proliferated LEO constellation significantly reduces the transition times when compared to with GEO constellations. Optical inter-satellite links, OISLs, increase the data rates for transmission, enabling high throughput in addition to low latency. Inherent to the Tranche Zero concept of operations is the limited alternative position, navigation, and timing capability. In Tranche Zero, GPS, GNSS, will be the primary source of precision, navigation, and timing for these SDA space vehicles. Tranche Zero will demonstrate cross-link ranging and timing accuracy relative to the GPS receive time and position stamp. There will be some ground processing of raw measurements. The long-term goal of the SDA constellation is to have an alternative PNT to be primary PNT source for SDA satellites, and all processing will be accomplished on board. Next slide, please. So now I'd like to talk about the integration of IBS into the transport layer. IBS will be integrated into the transport layer to modernize current capabilities to better support the warfighter's requirements for worldwide timely threat warning and situational awareness information across the range of military operations. The transport layer will provide long-haul IBS communications, thus providing disseminated intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance that have been derived from combat information to tactical warfighters and other tactical users. Warfighters and decision makers are supported through IBS dissemination of ISR data to support situational awareness, indications and warning, threat avoidance, force protection, friendly force tracking, and targeting and engagement. The transport layer of space vehicles shall provide bulk IBS data transport from CONUS or other geographically designated areas to joint intelligence operations centers or other designated intelligence centers, such as 9th MI, the 24th MI, or DCGSs. The integration of IBS on the transport layer has three primary goals. The first goal, the transport layer space vehicle shall provide a bent pipe transport capability for IBS messages through KA and optical links. Second, the transport layer space vehicle shall be capable of generating an IBS message set, which must conform to the common message format, MIL standard 6018, to be sent to the ground either through RF or optical links. Number three, the transport layer space vehicle shall demodulate IBS data on board and pass it to the BMC Cube module on board. The intent is to allow for experimentation with fusion and other multi-intelligence sources that are being received. All data being demodulated on the space vehicle will be handled at the secret level only. I want to emphasize that the SDA's transport layer is not designed to be a rebroadcast node on UHF for IBS feeds. Next slide, please. So now I'm going to talk about the integration of Link 16 onto the transport layer. Link 16 integration into the transport layer will modernize the current capabilities to better support the warfighter's requirements for worldwide timely threat warning and situational awareness information across a wide range of military operations. As envisioned for future tranches, SDA's tracking and custody layers will be providing time-sensitive targeting solutions. Warfighters and decision makers are supported through Link 16 dissemination of intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance data to support situational awareness, indications and warning, target tracking, and target engagement. With that said, SDA recognizes that the one critical component or the one critical technology associated with the Tranche Zero is the Link 16 integration. So I would like to emphasize what the goals for Tranche Zero for Link 16. We will receive and transmit ground-provided Link 16 messages through L-band Link 16 network to various users to include maritime, ground, air, or missile defense. We will receive and transmit Link 16 messages through L-band Link 16 network from various users to the SDA's Mission Operations Center. We will send, receive, store, and relay Link 16 messages in near real time to and from a ground station over SDA's Ka-band uplink or optical link to a space vehicle, and then down via Link 16 waveform to multiple users. To achieve these goals, SDA recognizes we must have the following. SDA space vehicles shall synchronize with the Link 16 network and transmit L-band to a ground coverage area of 100 nautical miles in diameter. The space vehicle shall be able to enter, synchronize, and transmit into a Link 16 network. The space vehicle shall transition the Link 16 network from one space vehicle to another space vehicle to extend the maximum duration of coverage. And last but not least is the space vehicle shall transmit high-throughput, low-latency Link 16 data through the Tranche Zero network through multiple space vehicles in the constellation. Next slide, please. This is talk about the transport and tracking layer. The tracking layer is designed to be able to detect and track emergency adversarial threats such as hypersonic glide vehicles. The tracking layer will be designed to link itself and will leverage the transport satellites when a tactical feed is needed via Link 16 or IBS. The tracking layer will be capable of using the transport layer as a long-haul capability to move data to processing development centers for future exploitation. Additionally, tracking will leverage the onboard processing architecture on the transport layer to run advanced processing algorithms that will support OPIR fusion needs. It is envisioned that tracking and transport will complement each other's capabilities as both layers continue to build out and provide military operations. Next slide, please. Now I'd like to talk about how you integrate tracking and custody into the transport layer. So the custody layer adds the capability to maintain some level of oversight of mobile threats or targets of high value, such as surface-to-air missiles in the IAS community and all-weather environments. Somewhat similar to the tracking layer, ISR data will be sent to the transport layer in future tranches, where they will be fused by custody to create actionable data that can be rapidly sent to the warfighter. For custody, the graphic above represents the future capability, which is not the focus of this RFP, but it is very important to understand as we proceed from Tranche 0 to Tranche 1. There are some slides further into this presentation which provide a more in-depth view of the custody layer, but I would like to emphasize that the custody layer is not part of this RFP, but is integral to the SDA's mission. For Tranche 0, custody plans to use multiple ISR data sources to get a geolocation or track suitable for weapons targeting and send that back to the transport layer via the support layer in an IBS or Link 16 compatible format. in future tranches that will be broadcast for dissemination to the warfighter to support integrated long-range fires or for further exploitation at the tactical edge. If research and development efforts underway to migrate data fusion to space matures more efficiently and sufficiently in the time tranche zero timeframe, custody may experiment with data processing supported from the ground onboard a single transport satellite's battle management command control and communications unit as a massless payload. This is a stretch goal for tranche zero. Next slide, please. So I think the last few slides have kind of set the baseline with respect to how the architecture for SDA looks for Tranche Zero. Now I'd like to emphasize and talk a little bit about the reference transport constellation as we envision it. The constellation consists of two types of space vehicle. Group A space vehicles, which provide a full networking infrastructure to link the entire constellation, and Group B space vehicles, which support in-plane crosslinks and mission communications through IBS and Link 16. The space vehicles are in two planes at an altitude of 1,000 kilometers and between 80 and 100 degrees inclination. Group A is evenly spaced in plane to allow for continuous contact with the ground and bidirectional cross-linking around the ring. Group B is clumped to allow for periods of continuous coverage of the theater for test and experimentation. Table 6 in your draft RFP provides the details of this nominal constellation. Next slide, please. And next slide, please. So as Dr. Tanier has already highlighted earlier, the SDA is doing and conducting some experimentations over the next fiscal year. And so what I would like to do is go into a little more depth on what these experimentations and demos entail. So one of the major technology areas that SDA is attempting to reduce risk is associated with these OISLs. Throughout the past 12 months, the SDA has worked very closely with industry as a whole to better understand the risk, and more importantly, what is the critical path towards accomplishing risk reduction and operationalizing these OISLs. While the SDA is closely monitoring industry's OISL development and subsequent experimentation, it is in the best interest of the DoD and subsequently the SDA to work with industry on other OISL risk reduction capabilities. As such, the SDA is working with a number of OISL vendors, which when successful will support DoD missions while supporting develop a commercial OISL path forward. The first transport layer experiment will launch two satellites built by Astra Digital with OISLs by SA Photonics in December of 2020. This experiment will test the OISL technology between two satellites made by the same manufacturer. While industry will have OISL experimentations during the next 2 years, the OISLs used by industry and by the DoD are from two different manufacturers, but the wavelength is the same at 1550 nanometers. Additionally, this experiment will be a risk reduction effort for the MANA Joint Concept Technology Demonstration, which will attempt to demonstrate an optical link from a ground terminal built by the Naval Research Lab to a space vehicle, OISLs between the space vehicles, and then from the OISLs to an airborne platform. The second experiment, which is still pending approvals, is designed to launch in March 2021 and will have two additional satellites made by different bus providers and OISL vendors. This experiment will demonstrate a different engineering approach to OISL development and subsequent manufacturing. Additionally, interoperability issues can be addressed and subsequent findings can be released to those vendors who have been awarded contracts. While the orbit determination has not been made, should orbits allow for out-of-plane OISL communications, this will be tested for functionality and the transport layer interoperability objective by proving that systems can be made by two different contractors and exchange information via an OISL. Upon completion, these experiments will have successfully demonstrated the OISLs at LEO, which are a core component of the transport layer. Next slide, please. SDA has received a number of questions with respect to what is the relationship between SDA the fully networked command control communications, the airborne management battle management system, and the joint all domain control command control and communications. So I think it bears a short discussion, at least a short explanation of exactly how all this fits together. Next slide, please. So before we get into the draft RFP, there are a couple of questions from vendors over the past few months as to the interoperability between the SDA, FNC cubed, and joint all domain command and control, JADC squared, formerly the multi-domain command and control. And while it is briefly mentioned in the draft RFP, we did want to take the time to address the relationships. The JADC square is designed to connect distributed sensors, shooters, and data from all domains to all forces. This is part of the joint warfighting concept. The Advanced Battle Management System, ABMS, is an enabler for JADC square. Their primary mission is to conceive, build, and test new technologies. Additionally, ABMS is designed to simultaneously receive, fuse, and act upon a vast array of data from warfighting domains, for example, maritime, land, air, space. The fully networked command and control of communications, FNC cubed, is tasked to develop technology transition points for emerging and developing technologies. The SDA, in many respects, is not only the backbone for which considerable amount of data and knowledge is exchanged, but the JADC squared and the SDA's mission is very synergistic. For example, the JADC squared sensing mission correlates to the SDA's custody and tracking layer. The JADC squared data transport mission correlates to the SDA's transport layer. The JADC squared data fusion layer is associated very closely with the SDA's custody and tracking layer. And last but not least, the JADC squared decision and command and control is very closely aligned to SDA's BMC cube layer. So I'd like to emphasize that JADC squared and the SDA's mission is synergistic in nature. Next slide, please. So when we get into this tranche spiral development, this is the first phase of the draft RFP. And while Dr. Trenier highlighted it early, again, I think it bears a little more explanation. So we are on the transport layer tranche spiral development approach. In order to accelerate the development and fielding of new space capabilities to address future threats, SDA plans on using a spiral development approach through a series of tranches. The spiral process in the past has been very effective in repeating development processes and reducing future risk. This slide shows the initial spirals for the transport layer. The first spiral, shown in the center, consists of risk reduction and experimentation, which will empirically demonstrate optical crosslinks. Those are indicated by the red lines. And downlinks on small SAT class satellites developed by multiple vendors indicated by the orange and blue icons. This experiment is a key proof of concept for the interoperability requirements for the SDA constellation. The second spiral, Tranche 0, is a test and train spiral and is shown on the top of the spiral. There are two major outcomes for Tranche 0. The first is to experiment and demonstrate the capability of the system to integrate and provide interoperability with other warfighting entities. It will be the first opportunity for the warfighter to develop the necessary tactics, techniques, and procedures toward movement to a more digitally enhanced warfighting capability. The second outcome is to serve as a baseline for future tranche development. The purpose of this draft RFP and resulting contract awards is to go into a prototyping effort leading to the development and fielding of test assets for Tranche 0. Tranche 0 improves upon the first spiral by adding two planes of space vehicles and by adding mission payloads to include IBS and Link 16, annotated by the green icons on the chart. It will provide periodic regional access and high throughput with low latency data transfer. Once Tranche 0 is launched and operating, another risk analysis will be completed to determine what modifications should be made to the next tranche. The next tranche, Tranche 1, shown at the bottom of the slide, is designed to address deficiencies in the prior tranche and also to integrate newer technologies to either reduce development and or operational costs or to address new emerging threats. Tranche 0 will increase the number of space vehicles in the constellation to provide persistent regional access and will provide increased integration with the other layers of the SDA constellation, including the tracking and the custody layer. There are a number of advantages to this approach. It allows SDA to monitor and reduce current and future risk. Each spiral development through a series of tranches gets a thorough review and analysis while risk is addressed early in the development process. The tranche approach expedites the delivery of advanced warfighting capabilities to the combatant commanders and services. New technology tools and ideas emerge daily. It is absolutely critically important that these technologies and ideas get integrated as quickly as possible. Unlike larger acquisition systems, the tranche approach allows for modifications to be made comparatively quickly as the threat evolves or new technology becomes available. This approach also allows the government to have access to higher fidelity costing, especially in terms of schedule and performance. Next slide, please. And the next slide. So as highlighted in the draft RFP, let me go over the Tranche Zero goals. Tranche Zero has basically six major goals for development, which, as you'll see later in the brief, have been translated into seven major objectives, which have been identified as thresholds and goals. While I'm sure that many of you have heard the elements of this brief in SDA's last industry day, it's worth the time to highlight again. So here are the six major goals for Tranche Zero. One is to demonstrate a capability for the warfighters to test, evaluate, and assess the capability to pass data with low latency from the operations centers through the constellation to the warfighters. This is inclusive of the OISLs. Second goal, to demonstrate the capability for the transport layer to send and receive wideband data from a space-based source external to the transport layer and transmit this data to the ground. Number three, is to demonstrate a limited battle management command and control and communications functionality, which includes the ability to upload and demonstrate application software. Number four is to demonstrate the ability to bulk transport integrated broadcast system data from various locations, accept an IBS transmitted data feed, generate an IBS message, and demodulate an IBS message for a specific geographic area and send those results to BMC cubed. Number five is demonstrate the ability to store, relay, send, and receive Link 16 messages in near real time to and from a ground station over the space vehicle's communication links. This is to demonstrate the ability of the space vehicle to transmit Link 16 messages to various users on the ground. And number six is to demonstrate the ability to maintain common relative time reference across the constellation without the use of GPS. Next slide, please. And next slide, please. So right now I'd like to go over the tentative schedule. So every acquisition attempts to balance cost, schedule, and performance. And despite everyone's best efforts, both industry and the government has learned to deal with program anomalies. While proposals will submit their bids within what they consider the realm of the possible, SDA has developed a proposed schedule for everyone's consideration. While there are some in the audience who would suggest that it's ambitious, SDA has been charged to push the envelope within the realm of the possible. Some elements of the small satellite community are manufacturing one space vehicle per day, and while the SDA understands that Tranche Zero vehicles are designed to have more complexity, one of the outcomes of Tranche Zero development is a fundamental understanding of how industry will approach a commoditized bus with additions for very specific applications. The bottom line is that this chart is for reference only, but it provides an insight into the thought process of how SDA has approached Tranche Zero development. Next slide, please. So I would like to go a little bit about how the SAL was developed and why it's developed the way it is. So there was considerable debate within SDA on how to approach the RFP development, especially since most of the SDA team had experienced the normal acquisition processes. We had to make the choice on whether to make the draft RFP generic, throw it over the fence with the hopes that you, industry, would build exactly what SDA required. That level of confidence was lost quickly. As was mentioned previously, we all don't speak the same language. Hence, SDA wanted to approach the RFP from a different perspective. SDA wanted to better articulate what was required for Tranche Zero. Industry will take note that specific tasks tasks laid out in the draft RFP. For example, Section 4.5 of the SOW is networking. Our general requirements for the system are specific technology areas like Section 4.4, optical inter-satellite links, and radio frequency crosslinks, which require higher fidelity explanations. Each specific task under Section 4 has three subheadings, has the general information, technical objectives, and specific requirements. So the general information is designed to provide additional details and background information for the requirement or technology area and how those details synergize with the CONOPS. This general information area also serves to identify external relationships where required. For example, under spectrum management, the general information section highlights how federal spectrum is granted. Technical requirements are designed to provide a little more fidelity into the relationship between the general requirement and the technology required to satisfy those requirements. And then last but not least are the technical objectives. The technical objectives defined the requirements in the transport layer system. Specific requirements or actions that the offeror is required to perform. As such, this section specifies compliance, certifications, and or implementation requirements. Next slide, please. And next slide. So you notice in the draft RFP, there are some technology risk areas. The one area that is notably absent from that is cyber, and we will be talking about cyber later on in the discussion this morning. So SDA does recognize there are a number of risk areas associated with the development and the deployment of Tranche 0. SDA also recognizes that to achieve the goals highlighted in the draft RFP will probably require some teaming between centers of excellence. While SDA is not directing a teaming relationship, SDA has been following the successes in the commercial sector with respect to teaming and technology applications. With that said, these are the technology areas which SDA believes incurs the most risk. OISLs. SDA has been following OISL development and operations in the commercial sector. While we are encouraged with the number of OISL demonstrations occurring for this calendar year, it is still considered a high-risk area. SDA will be conducting its own OISL demonstrations later calendar year 2020, but this is after source selection. As such, SDA is requesting that offerors propose radio frequency crosslinks as an onboard backup to maintain this option at least through critical design review. SWAP, size, weight, and power. Based on the number of OISLs, Link 16, the BMC Cube, crypto, and normal space vehicle operations, SDA understands that the design trade-offs will have to address SWAP. This is especially true as SDA would prefer operations sustained on a commoditized bus or a design which affords commodity builds. And I want to emphasize a design which affords commodity builds. The space vehicle antenna design. SDA has conducted several technological trades associated with space vehicle antenna design. While there is a wide range of antennas that can perform the mission, SDA recommends, but does not mandate, an active electronic scanned array antenna. Based on the number of users in an area of responsibility, an ESA antenna is considered to be one of the few options available for electronically steer the beams and to support customers in the AOR. Supply chain. SDA's own internal studies have suggested, based on the number of commoditized bus developers and producers in the marketplace today, that adequate supply chains cannot currently handle the number of mega constellations under development. Within their proposals, bidders shall address critical dependencies within their supply chain, how fragile these chains are to disruption, and mitigation plans designed to overcome potential disruptions and thereby ensure space vehicle delivery within proposed cost and schedule. Networking. Based on SDA's meetings with industry, there are several vendors who have suggested that the concept of space mesh networking constellation has been sufficiently addressed. The commercial mega constellations are all in excess of 1,500 space vehicles, larger than what was envisioned for the transport layer upon completion. This would suggest that the industry has developed and matured a dynamic routing capability, and SDA looks forward to your responses. As I mentioned, As I mentioned, cyber is not up there, but let me note cyber now, and I'll note it again later. While it is noted that cybersecurity is not one of the technology risk areas, it should be considered a risk area as a single entity. SDA is still working within the DoD to define the best approach to cybersecurity protection and view of NIST risk management framework for information systems and organizations and the National Institutes of Standards special publication 800-30, which is the guide for conduction of risk assessments. In the release of the final RFP, expect further documentation with respect to how industry is expected to handle cybersecurity. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. So now we're going to go into these individual areas, IBS, Link 16, networking, OISLs. So the Integrated Broadcast Service Enterprise disseminates near real-time information tactically, operationally, significant intelligence information to the warfighter, providing situational awareness, missile defense, and missile warning. IBS is a theater-tailored information and intelligence dissemination architecture with global connectivity that uses a standardized common data format and a common tactical terminal family, which is interoperable with current and programmed tactical and strategic warfare systems. SDA Tranche 0 has three primary use cases for IBS integration. The transport layer shall be able to transport bulk IBS data from one geographic location to another. The transport layer space vehicle shall provide a bent pipe transport capability for IBS messages through Ka band and optical links. The intent is not, and I can't emphasize this enough, it is not to transmit on UHF as a normal IBS broadcast. Eventually, when the constellation is fully developed, the requirement will be to transport IBS data from CONUS or other geographically designated areas to the Joint Intelligence Operations Centers and or other designated intelligence centers or command centers in the AOR. The transport layer space vehicle shall be capable of producing an IBS message set, which must conform to the common message format, MIL standard 6018, and send it to the ground via K-band or optical downlink. The transport layer space vehicle shall also be able to demodulate IBS data on board and pass it to a BMCQ module on board. The intent is to allow for experimentation with fusion and other multi-intelligence sources being received. All data being demodulated on the space vehicle will be handled at the secret level only. Next slide, please. And next slide. So let's talk Link 16 integration. One of the most complex functions of the SDA is requesting industry to integrate Link 16 on board the transport layer space vehicles, which is Group B. The SDA is requesting the respective vendors develop and deploy a Link 16 capability on each group space vehicle while ensuring that no modification to user equipment is required. It is incumbent upon the contractor to ensure that the space vehicle has the appropriate information assurance compartmentalization to handle secret-level Link 16 messages while operating the necessary other security parameters, for example, IBS, TT&C, and others. SDA also has a requirement to interface with Link 16 terminal diagnostics from a ground station to report various network status and troubleshooting features. Diagnostic information shall include connection strength for each participant, metric information, how well the link is performing, and coarse or fine synchronization network participation status. Because of the complexity of this engineering task, it is necessary that the contractor provide technical specifications, antenna modeling, and the documentation to support Link 16 network interoperability verification. Additionally, it is necessary for the contractor to provide and execute Link 16 development, test, and verification plans to support the technical objectives outlined in Section 4.3.2 of your draft RFP. As highlighted previously, the SDA has developed a very strong teaming relationship with AFRL XVI Link 16 program. As the XVI program goes through its milestones, the government will look at releasing data engineering data to the award-winning vendors. Next slide, please. And next slide. As of the date of this draft RFP, there is no accepted industry standard for which optical inter-satellite links are being built or manufactured for use in space applications. The Consultant Committee for Space Data Systems, CCSDS, approved the optical communications physical layer and the optical communications coding and synchronization standards in August 2019. Together, the two standards define the physical and link layers of space-to-ground and ground-to-space photon starved links through atmospheric channels. Specifically, they described the required physical layer characteristics of the telemetry, beacon, and optional data transmission accompanying the beacon, and the coding and synchronization sublayers specifying the sequence of pulse and unpulse slots. OISL systems for SDA applications must be interoperable. So a standard common language to exchange ramming and timing data is important. Knowledge of the SDA's space vehicle PVT will be critical to the proper operations of the OISL layer and will be used to enable the SDA's alternative position and navigation mission. These data shall at a minimum require integrated inter-satellite ranging and timing measurements and each space vehicle's final PVT solution. Additionally, data would include the status of the GPS receiver and its PVT estimates. Next slide. For Tranche 0, the SDA will establish an open interface control description for optical inter-satellite links, and that is the section in your SAL, which is referred to as the Tranche 0 profile. The intent is to iteratively help industry to collaborate to ensure interoperability between OISLs from multiple vendors. While this open interface control description defines many parameters for optical communications between the physical and link layers, neither the CCSDS standards nor this document is sufficient to ensure interoperability. It is absolutely critical that industry develops a robust interaction, communication, and collaboration amongst its partners. Next slide, please. As a risk reduction effort, radio frequency crosslinks will be carried in the design of the system through the critical design review. While the SDA is aware of the significant accomplishments in the commercial sector and the technical development for OISLs as the draft RFP is released, successful operation on board has been limited. As mentioned previously, SDA is sponsoring and monitoring OISL on-orbit experimentations. As mitigation against continued challenges with OISLs, SDA expects vendors to carry RF crosslinks in parallel with OISLs. By that point, SDA will be able to make a more informed decision based on the results of these on-orbit demonstrations. The crosslink behavior described should be essentially the same, although lower bandwidth is expected than on the OISLs. Next slide. And next slide. Now we're on networking. So networking is certainly one of those critical technology areas that were highlighted earlier in the presentation. There are networking attributes which have yet to be defined for small to large PLEO constellations, such as physical topologies, transports, whether it's multi or single networks, routing protocols, full or partial mesh network. There is still much development work that needs to be accomplished to anticipate the space vehicle densities, the orbital dynamics, the traffic engineering parameters, the service and network management, and the desired network behaviors. All of our eventual implementations will be looking to leverage that which other industries have spearheaded so that proliferated space can just be another communications arena that evolves rapidly through industry development. The bottom line is that SDA considers networking to be a risk category. The trade space is open, and SDA looks forward to your response. Next slide, please. And next slide. So Tranche 0 has two methods for which information can be transmitted to and received from the ground, optical links and RF links. Currently, optical downlinks do not require ITU approvals, but there is an arduous process in place for RF downlink approvals. The development of mega LEO constellations have created paper satellites that do not exist when spectrum rights were obtained. Consequently, recent consensus by the World Radio Communications Conference, WRC 19, states that the international filing sent to the IDU will have to reflect a reasonable amount of time in which systems are launched and deemed operational. If the specified number of systems is not launched in the given time frame, then the filing will be modified to the launched number of systems. This is the baseline approach that SDA has taken to ensure success in spectrum management. The transport layer will use Ka-band for RF uplinks and downlinks. It is the government's responsibility to ensure that required documentation is submitted to the various NTIA committees and subcommittees involved in the process for obtaining approvals. The SDA has started that process, but the government is very dependent on the documentation delivered from the contractor to make the necessary frequency filings. Section 4.6.3 of your draft RFP specifies these requirements. These include, but not limited to, the frequency plan, the DD-1494 application for equipment frequency allocation, technical details on transmitter, receiver, and antenna characteristics, and a completed spectrum support risk analysis updated at key system milestones in accordance with DOTI instruction 4650.01. Next slide, please. Now we'll talk about GPS integration onto the SDA space vehicles. The SDA's transport layer and subsequent operations require precise knowledge of each of the SDA satellite's position, velocity, and time to support satellite operations. To support these PBT requirements, each satellite will need to include an integrated GPS receiver and supporting timing system. The GPS receiver PBT data will also be used as truth reference to support determination of the accuracy of the OSL range measurements. All raw GPS receiver data will be stored for period download to support post-processing higher accuracy satellite platform PVD determinations. The GPS system shall be designed to operate in LEO orbit ranging, be capable of accounting for high LEO satellite Doppler rates and rapid acquisition of GPS satellites. The GPS receiver system shall distribute real-time PVT data supporting integrated SDA satellite operations, to include OISLs, IBS, Link 16, and potential future PNT signal service. Precise time and frequency will also be critical to satellite operations being provided by the GPS receiver system timing interface. Next slide, please. Now we're going to talk about alternative position, navigation, and timing. The transport layer operations will require precise knowledge of each of the SDA satellites' position, velocity, and time to support satellite operations, as well as its various integrated payloads. To support mission robustness, the OSLs must provide accurate ranging timing information of the relative distance between the SDA space vehicles. The OISL shall be capable of making inter-satellite range measurements with sub-meter precision. This ranging accuracy translates to estimate of relative satellite timing differences within a few nanoseconds measured relative to each of the satellite's onboard clocks. These measurements will include both satellite-to-satellite and satellite-to-ground range timing measurements. The ground optical terminal will be synchronized to the DoD standard for universal time coordinated into a pre-surveyed position near the ground terminal within a few centimeters of WGS-84. This will provide absolute reference for the constellation PVT for each base vehicle. The transport layer envisions the APNT cross-link ranging system to support the SDA PVT by providing ranging measurements relative to the satellite clock at 1 pulse per second and 10 megahertz frequency reference. In turn, these range measurements will be transmitted across the satellite bus and across the optical data links to support the orbit and clock determination. For APNT, the SDA envisions Tranzville to be heavily involved in experimentation and demonstration to better architect how an APNT solution can be developed. Next slide. So now attention goes to the battle management command control communications layer. And Dr. Tenera highlighted this during his brief, and it pretty much encompasses all layers of the SDA architecture. So even though BMC cubed is not a primary goal at Tranche Zero, there are some key risk reduction activities from onboard processing, network, and autonomy. The overall plan is to demonstrate fundamental connectivity and rudimentary BMC cube functionality. Starting at the left-hand side of the chart, you can see that the ground interface requirements at Tranche Zero are relatively simplistic. The first two requirements will allow the uplink of input data for massless payloads and the downlink of the resulting output data. The last requirement will enable the uplink of software updates to the onboard BMCQ module from the ground. Moving to the space-based requirements, we plan on demonstrating both steady-state onboard processing capabilities as well as that of peak performance and how it can be achieved. Along with the characterization of performance, we also plan to demonstrate the operation of onboard massless payloads. Sticking to this vision of an open architecture, there will be a contract deliverable to create a non-proprietary and freely releasable software development kit. And I would like to emphasize the non-proprietary. Once the software development kit is created, it will be provided to third parties to allow them to independently code massless payloads for use on board the BMC cube module. The SDA plans to launch Tranche Zero satellites with an initial BMC cube software load, but the SDA will also demonstrate the ability to perform on-orbit software updates across the constellation. The final function of the BMC cube module at Tranche Zero will be to act as an alternative landing zone for hosted payload communications. I want to emphasize that the BMCQ module is an alternative landing zone because the core satellite functionality is expected to be separate and should continue to function even if the module fails. The concept of operations at Tranche Zero will focus on testing and demonstration of capabilities we plan to refine for Tranche One. And this goes back to the spiral development discussion we had previously. Starting at the foundational level, we plan to test out the connectivity between the support layer and hosted payloads to the BMCQ module. We will flesh out a plan for performing the same software update across multiple satellites while balancing the trade between risk and efficiency. We need to be able to demonstrate that we have thought through the potential risk and can demonstrate a robust software update process that satellite operators can trust. The final part of our Tranche Zero concept of operations revolves around the demonstration of massless payloads and to perform on-orbit data fusion. This demonstration is designed to show how realistic benefits associated with moving processors closer to the sensor to convert raw data into actual intelligence. The output of the massless payloads will be sent to the ground terminal in Tranche Zero rather than going directly to the user. Once the output arrives on the ground, it can be routed if necessary to users to simulate the planned Tranche 1 capability of going direct to the on-orbit massless payloads down to a user. The most significant outcome from Tranche 0 will be the risk reduction efforts that inform the future BMC cubed architecture. For example, onboard processing metrics captured at Tranche 0 will be compared to the requirements of applications in the development on the ground. The identified processing trades will inform which capabilities migrate on board at T1. In a similar fashion, the onboard performance of the OISLs will help inform decisions for Tranche 1 on the amount of data that we can reasonably expect to transfer from node to node. Data from the tracking sensors will also inform whether our onboard processing capabilities will be sufficient for Tranche 1. Finally, reliability data from COT software will help inform future BMCQ module designs. Next slide. And next slide. The transport layer Tranche Zero, by its very nature, is a very complex systems engineering approach towards the design, the building, and operationalizing of a transport capability designed to service the future complex nature of war. Additionally, the transport layer hosts a few critical missions on board. These include the IBS, the Link 16, custody, BMC cube, and tracking, all of which have systems and subsystems and critical functionalities. By direction, cybersecurity, as defined by NSPD 54, will address as early as possible in the acquisition process all information technology systems. Additionally, based on the DoD cybersecurity instruction, the DoD will implement a multi-tiered cybersecurity risk management process to protect assets from the DoD information enterprise level through the DoD component level down to the information security as defined in NIST publication 839 and the Committee on National Security Systems Policy. The transport layer, Tranche Zero, is intended to be a training, demonstration, and tactics, techniques, and procedures constellation. As such, it isn't designed to have the same level of cyber protection as will be integrated onto future tranches, but it is required to adhere to the DoD's cybersecurity policy. As industry will note, there was a placeholder in the draft RFP for cybersecurity requirements. The SDA is still working with the CIO and the NSA on the appropriate approach in achieving the necessary cyber protection for Tranche Zero. When the final RFP language for cybersecurity has been approved, it will be released to industry in the final RFP release. Next slide, please. The transport layer, by its defined architecture, inherently has a number of cryptographic challenges. Most of these cryptographic challenges require NSA certification encryption equipment. The following aspects of the transport layer will require NSA certified equipment: the intelligence broadcast system, Link 16, OISL to OISL data transfer, and telemetry tracking and calibration. Additionally, there are red-black architecture considerations that need to be addressed to ensure the integrity of the system, as well as adhering to NSA's design and operational guidelines. As is currently architectured, these four areas must adhere to NSA's certified encryption equipment, which is designed to protect systems requiring the most stringent protection mechanisms. Areas requiring NSA's certified encryption equipment must be certified by NSA for encrypting and decrypting classified and sensitive national security information when appropriately keyed. Additionally, these areas must be developed using established NSA business practices and containing NSA-approved algorithms. Any equipment, device, or system integrated on the transport layer, which includes testing and formal analysis of crypto security, functional security, tamper resistance, emission security, and security of the product manufacturing and distribution, must adhere to NSA standards. Based on the SDA's mission and the transport layer requirements, proposers should pay a particular attention to NSA requirements for both ComSec and TransSec. The contractor will comply with the Federal Information Processing Standard, FIPS 140-3, security requirements for cryptographic modules, unless NSA's Information Assurance Security Requirements, IASRD, and technical security requirements document requirements are levied due to NSA crypto certification processes. FIPS 140-3 covers the design, development, and implementation of cryptographic modules and underlying algorithms, whether they are in hardware or software. Next slide, please. Now, we'd like to make industry aware, if they're not already, of NSA's commercial solutions for classified program. The RFP does make reference to the NSA's commercial solutions for classified program. The SDA is encouraging proposals to consider this new program. The U.S. government customers increasingly require the use of the market's most modern commercial hardware and software technology within the national security systems in order to achieve its mission goals. Consequently, the National Security Agency, the Central Security Services, is developing new ways to leverage emerging technologies to deliver more timely information assurance solutions for rapidly evolving customer requirements. The NSA CSS's commercial solutions for classified process enables commercial products to be used in layered solutions to protect classified NSS information. This provides the ability to securely communicate based on commercial standards with a solution that can be filled in months, but not years. By leveraging commercially based and traditional government off-the-shelf information assurance solutions, NSA comprehensive information assurance strategy uses the right tool for the right job. Additionally, NSA's information assurity mission continues to support customer with assisting GOTS information assurance solutions, are needs that can only be met with GOTS. So the key here is we've already identified the fact that SWAP is a problem on board or could be a problem on board. There are some commercial solutions which are lower power requirements, which NSA is willing to accept in lieu of. Next slide. And next slide. So let's talk about the hardware in the loop testbed, which we've previously mentioned. The government is in the initial planning phase of setting up a hardware in the loop testbed at the Naval Research Laboratory in Washington, D.C. The testbed will be the government-owned and operated in order to provide an impartial means to verify Tranche 0 contractor designs. It will also be operated at the unclassified level to allow the widest possible participation amongst U.S. companies. Each contractor will be responsible for providing a complete engineering unit of the space vehicle control, telemetry, and data handling subsystems and communication subsystems inclusive of OISLs to the testbed. Along with each engineering unit, the contractor will be expected to provide a user manual as well as the ground support equipment and special test equipment needed for and to operate the unit. The contractor will also furnish unclassified test encryption keys as necessary in order to complete the testing. There is no industry standard on OSL compatibility testing, so we would like each vendor to submit a plan to demonstrate OISL compatibility with other vendors using a flight representative model by critical design review. The final requirement is that each contractor work with the testbed employees to help integrate the engineering units into the government's testbed. Once the engineering units are integrated, the plan is to verify compatibility and interoperability as necessary. We plan to verify the individual spacecraft and payload interfaces as well as the compatibility of the network and routing behavior across each of the vendors. We will also verify the optical and Ka band space to ground links and the space to ground air tactical links over L band. There are two space to space cross-link solutions that are to be carried through CDR, the OISLs and the RFV band, so they will both need to be verified. As noted previously, a decision we made at CDR on which two cross-link technologies will actually be flown on Tranche 0. The final portion of the test band verification will focus on verifying the integrated VMCQ applications. The test bed will continue to evolve with each tranche of satellites to verify requirements and test interoperability prior to future tranches. So next slide, please. And now we're going into ground system and operations. So operations for Tranche 0 satellites will occur at the Naval Research Laboratory's Blossom Point tracking facility in Maryland. Blossom Point personnel currently operate several experimental and operational satellites across the DoD. The Blossom Point tracking facility will conduct Tranche 0 on-orbit operations through a pre-existing integrated hardware and software system. Operational activities conducted at Blossom Point operators include satellite system data acquisition and analysis, anomaly detection and resolution, and space vehicle maneuver planning and execution. All satellites will be operated using pre-existing command and control software systems owned and operated by the Navy. For example, the Virtual Mission Operations Center, or the VMOC software, is a web-based mission planning and scheduling support system for modeling, tasking, scheduling, managing users' requests, and planning orbit maneuvers. The Neptune system is used for command and control of satellites to accomplish development, test, integration, launch, and routine satellite operation activities. Finally, the Ocean software is used for ephemeris prediction in support of satellite missions and ground operations. Blossom Point has several on-site antennas and operates in a radio frequency quiet zone. Antenna types include SGLSs, USBs, C, X, KA downlink, and UHF. KA uplink capabilities are currently not available at Blossom Point, and the SDA program office is working to connect or acquire that capability to support our operations. Blossom Point operators and systems are currently scoped to provide command and control services to all SDA Tranche 0 satellites. As such, ground-based data processing, network management, and other special software and hardware capabilities should be provided by you, the space vehicle provider, and included in your proposal. The support cell and Naval Research Lab will work with you to host, operate, manage, install, and integrate these systems into the Blossom Point tracking facility. Next slide, please. And let's talk about launch for a second, and then we'll take a break. So all launch services will be acquired and managed by the SDA support cell. And I would like to emphasize that space vehicle providers will not be asked to provide delivery on orbit. SDA will leverage the Space and Missile Sister Space and Missile Center's Launch Enterprise Directorate to provide for dedicated or rideshare launch services for our Transport Tranche 0 satellites. Our first choice is a dedicated launch acquired through the Orbital Services Program contract, known as OSP-4. OSP-4 provides dedicated launch services through an IDIQ contract. Current providers on the OSP-4 contract are Evium, Firefly Black, Northrop Grumman Innovation Systems, Rocket Lab USA, Space Exploitation Technologies, and others. OSP-4 allows for the rapid acquisition of launch services to meet mission requirements for payloads greater than 400 pounds. This enables launch to any orbit within 12 to 24 months from the task order award. SDA will work with the space vehicle providers on the timing of delivery and batching of space vehicles, and then compete each mission among the IDIQ awardees. Another approach SDA will use to acquire launch services is through the Space and Missile Systems Center Mission Manifest Office, also known as MMO. The MMO manages national security space launch and other rideshare opportunities. This approach will likely be used when only one or two satellites need to be put into orbit or when a rideshare opportunity aligns with our appropriate scheduled deliveries. Both the OSP-4 and MMO offices have integration contracts in place to support pre-launch activities. The space vehicle provider will need to provide support to these integration activities with details to be provided in the bidder's library's documents. And with that, I'd like to take a 15-minute break. So if everyone can return at 10:35 Eastern Standard Time, that would be great. And Jen, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you all for sticking with us through that break. And I will turn it back over now to Tim Boudreau, the lead for SDA's transport cell.
Thank you, Jen. I'd like to do a sound check real quick.
Yes, you're coming through loud and clear.
All right, next slide, please.
Tim, we might have lost audio there. Do you want to try a sound check again?
Yeah, we're good now.
Okay.
Now we're on interoperability. So it was mentioned previously that offers may bid on Group A space vehicles or Group B space vehicles. So that in itself poses a situation with respect to interoperability. So I like to emphasize the aspect of interoperability as we go through the rest of the brief today. So SDA requires that each satellite be manufactured and be compatible and interoperable with the other contractor satellites. In addition, the satellite shall demonstrate the ability to conduct operations through a common ground station and various space, ground, and air terminals. The initial transport layer is to provide data routing from space, ground entry points, and user terminals. Each contractor shall be responsible for quantifying their proposed interoperability design elements in the context of the entire space communication enterprise. The SDA's networking and time transfer subsystems shall have physical layer interoperability defined via contracted adopted commercial standards and protocols that can be verified through hardware in-the-loop testing. This includes, but not limited to, satellite-to-satellite optical communications, satellite-to-satellite RF V-band communications, satellite-to-ground optical communications, satellite-to-ground Ka-band IBS data transfer communications, satellite-to-ground, satellite-to-air L-band Link 16 communications. This also includes an assessment of appropriate waveforms, modulations, and coding for potential aperture and transceiver capabilities, and necessitates the joint development of detailed ICDs for each of these communication interfaces. These satellites will have link, data link, and network layer interoperability via adopted commercial standards and protocols. For example, here are some of the following. Frame and packet handling on both sides of the interfaces. Red and black encapsulation where necessary. IP network address translations. Robust yet simple routing schemes to take advantage of the constellation's relatively slow dynamic motion, limited user base, limited ground-based interaction, and the desire to demonstrate as much autonomous in nature in the network as possible. But the SDA support layer will provide the Satellite Operations Center and the Mission Operations Center at Blossom Point the ability to communicate with the satellites, perform satellite operations, that's normal ops, orbit adjustments, recovery, deorbit, software, and data uploads, perform network operations, that's including routing table generations with autonomous network implementations, software-defined radio update generations, and mission planning to support the transport layer demonstrations and exercises. Next slide, please. The support layer needs to fully understand how to operate the satellites in support of these operational activities. The transport layer needs to be able to verify the interoperability of all in-flight modifications to the satellite network and software and settings prior to any new operations. It is the objective of the SDA transport layer to ensure interoperability with all required systems prior to launch. Simulations, test beds, and flight unit assessments and tests will be performed to verify compatibility and interoperability. Once the constellations are on orbit, new terminals will be tested with hardware in the loop and software in the loop test beds and other test units to ensure interoperability. Next slide, please. And next slide, please. So we've mentioned custody before, and while custody is not a baseline in the draft RFP, again, it's worth emphasizing. So the custody's long-term mission, and that's past Tranche 0, is to track left of launch, time-critical ground, maritime, and eventually air targets for the future National Defense Space Architecture. In tracking these targets, custody will enable the creation of a targeting solution that is sent with low latency from the sensor that collects the data to the warfighter. Custody will partner with other organizations, including tactical ISR small sat constellations, and will orchestrate a custody coherent architecture. The multi-phenomenology data collected from this architecture will be integrated by way of multi-imp fusion to fulfill custody's mission of enabling the creation of targeting solutions. Initially, fusion will occur on the ground, but will be migrated to space to the onboard BMC processor and spirals in line with the SDA's future tranches. In the near term, for Capstone and Tranche 0, the graphic on this chart will illustrate how custody interfaces with the transport layer. There are three paths for data transfer during this capstone. In white, the custody partner sensors will detect a target and the data will be transmitted to the ground to custody's ground-based data fusion center. A targeting solution will be generated on the ground, transmitted to the transportation layer, and then disseminated to the warfighter. In the red, some limited space-based fusion capability will potentially be demonstrated on board of the transportation layer with help from ground-based processing and targeting solutions, which will be generated and then transported to the tactical edge by the transport layer. In the yellow, the bulk data transfer for mission partners will be accomplished from CONUS or from a regional command center or intel center by the transport layer and then rebroadcast to the tactical edge to enable the distribution of mission-critical data to the warfighter in the event of a fiber cut scenario. Next slide. Next slide is more on the custody Tranche 0 CONOPS. This is a reference functional block diagram of the custody layer that shows the interfaces between custody and the transport layers. The green blocks are the custody partners providing satellite sensor data to the ground-based custody multi-int software application, with orange blocks to the left. The light orange blocks at the bottom middle show the determined, yet to be determined interface between the ground-based custody application and the in-space transport satellite. Transport connects to the on-orbit custody application through a yet to be determined interface between transport and the on-orbit custody application. Sensor data collected by partner spacecraft will be processed by the custody software primarily on the ground. The Tranche 0 capstone event will demonstrate fusion and building a targeting solution as well as tipping queuing to enable retasking of sensor collections if necessary. Fusion at this point will likely include two phenomenologies. RF and SAR are the most highly desirable. The data will be transmitted to the transport layer. If possible, some limited space-based fusion will be performed in a single transport satellite assisted by ground resources. Results will then be transferred back to the transport BMC cube layer, which will format the data messages for dissemination to the tactical edge. Specific goals for Tranche 0 capstone event for the custody layer include sensor inputs to the ground-based custody multi-int fusion software provided via custom Tranche 0 specific interfaces, still yet to be determined. Multi-int sensor fusion processing primarily using ground-based facilities. Ground-based custody software connected to the transport on-orbit network, yet to be determined interfaces. On-orbit custody software interface to the transport via yet to be determined interfaces. And custody output via the transport BMC cube layer to the warfighter, either through Link 16, IBS, the optical ground, or the RF ground. Next slide, please. And next slide. SDA's own internal studies have suggested, based on the number of commoditized bus developers and producers in the marketplace today, that adequate supply chains cannot currently handle the number of mega constellations under development. During the last year, SDA has kept apprised through our FFRDC resources of the effects of emerging small satellite industries' impact on the supply chain market. To address SDA's concerns, SDA commissioned a small satellite supply chain study to assess the global commercial space small sat supply chain in support of near-term RFP release. As highlighted in the slide, SDA has been focusing on tiers 1 through 4, which encompasses components or parts, assemblies, subsystems, and systems. As importantly, the SDA has been concentrating specifically on solar cells, batteries, reaction wheels, star trackers, and rad-hardened or rad-tolerant electronics. We will specifically address the rad-hard issue on the next slide. SDA believes, especially in light of COVID-19 pandemic, that supply chain is a high-interest item as we get closer to contract award. With that in mind, within their proposals, bidders shall address critical dependencies within their supply chain, how fragile these chains are to disruption, and mitigation plans designed to overcome potential disruptions and thereby ensuring space vehicle delivery within proposed cost and schedule. Next slide, please. As mentioned on the previous slide, rad-hardened electronics is a high-interest item for space vehicle development. With respect to the small satellite market as it evolves, there are three basic approaches for rad hardening. The small satellite industry can use approved radiation-hardened chips, which are very low risk but very expensive. Some vendors in the industry would suggest these are overkill, especially in consideration of the radiation environment in which these space vehicles are operating. Another approach is to use commercial off-the-shelf products and upstream. This has proven in some cases to be less expensive. Testing is outsourced, but entails higher risk for initial missions. While the government is not directing a specific approach, there are ongoing efforts which compromise between rad-hardened chips and upscreening. The DoD has seen cases where traditional rad-hard electronic suppliers are leveraging existing product lines by streamlining certification and testing to lower cost. In some cases, the savings range between 60 to 90%. Radiation-tolerant plastic package integrated circuits have become cost-effective solutions for shorter duration LEO missions. Regardless of the method for which the vendors intend to approach the requested design life of the space vehicle, the government would like to ensure there's an open communication in the approach to dealing with the radiation environment. Next slide, please. So SDA is well aware of the implications to the aerospace sector with respect to COVID-19. There are many unknown unknowns resulting from the COVID-19 pandemic. Some manufacturing facilities in the U.S. have experienced closures, which has impacted schedules. COVID-19 may have a significant impact on the supply chains to even the most secure aerospace companies. Most small satellite companies are funded by venture capitalists, and COVID-19 has made funding more challenging for all industries. Based on early market conditions, it appears that venture capitalists may approach further investments with a wait-and-see approach before investing further. While the extent of the impacts will not be known until some normalcy to the aerospace sector has returned, SDA would like to ensure that the risk associated with long lead items is addressed in their proposals. Next slide, please. When one of our technology risk areas, SWAP, which was identified earlier, based on the number of OISLs, Link 16, BMCQ, crypto, and normal space vehicle operations, the SDA understands the design trade-offs necessary to address SWAP. This is especially true as SDA would prefer operations sustained on a commoditized bus or a design which affords commoditized builds. Over the past few months, SDA has accomplished a number of SWAP analyses in an attempt to better understand what subsystems would have major power implications on the bus. Analysis was accomplished by focus on payload power in order to estimate SWAP availability, especially in light of maximum duty cycles, partially populated nodes, and other anticipated power requirements. These SWAP analyses led to the decision of procuring two groups with power variances depending on the payload, to be discussed later. There will be 7 Group A space vehicles per plane. Group A space vehicles will have 4 inter-satellite links, 2 in-plane links pointing backward and forward, and 2 cross-plane links pointing left or right or down. Group A space vehicles will carry a GPS receiver, a BMCQ module, a KA downlink for TT&C, and an IBS mission payload. Group A space vehicles will be evenly distributed in the planes. There will be 3 Group B space vehicles per plane. Group B space vehicles will have 2 in-plane inter-satellite links pointing forward and backward. Group B space vehicles will carry a GPS receiver, a BMCQ module, a KA downlink to TT&C, an IBS payload, and a Link 16 payload. The number of inter-satellite links is reduced to provide SWAP for the Link 16 payload. In order to allow for a larger block of continuous coverage time for the Link 16 payload, the Group B satellites will be clustered in each plane. SWAP has been identified as one of those critical technologies necessary to make SDA's Tranche 0 a success. As such, it is a very high-level interest item among the government reviews. Next slide, please. And next slide. So the Tranche 0 layer constellation consists of 20 space vehicles launched in 2 planes. As shown in the table above, the space vehicles will fall into 2 capability groups. Capability group A, which is shown in blue, and B, which is shown in green. A single plane is shown at the bottom of the chart. The nominal Tranche 0 constellation will be at an altitude of 1,000 kilometers and an inclination between 80 and 100 degrees. There will be 7 Group A space vehicles per plane. Group A space vehicles will have 4 inter-satellite links, 2 in-plane links pointing forward and backward, and 2 cross-plane links pointing left or right or down to an optical ground station. Group A space vehicles will carry a GPS receiver, a GPS module, a KA downlink for TT&C, and an IBS mission payload. Group A space vehicles will be evenly distributed in each plane. There will be 3 Group B space vehicles per plane. Group B space vehicles will have 2 in-plane inter-satellite links pointing forward and backward. Group B space vehicles will carry a GPS receiver, a BMCQ module, a KA downlink for TT&C, an IBS mission payload, and a Link 16 payload. The number of inter-satellite links is reduced to provide SWAP for the Link 16 payload. Most important, offerors will be able to bid on only Group A space vehicles, only Group B space vehicles, or both groups of space vehicles. Given that multiple vendors may be awarded contracts, interoperability between the vendors in both groups is necessary, critically necessary, to the success of the SDA mission. All space vehicles must be able to communicate with all other space vehicles in the same plane and with the ground. Group A space vehicles must also be able to communicate cross-plane to other Group A space vehicles. This architecture is only possible through the use of open standards and the development of interoperable systems. It cannot be emphasized enough that interoperability is key and critical to the SDA's Tranche 0 award. Next slide, please. Price and rationale. As mentioned previously, offers may bid on Group A space vehicles, Group B space vehicles, or both groups. SDA requests that the total price be broken down according to the pricing table displayed at the top of the slide. Offers shall provide a price for the non-reoccurring engineering, NRE, for each group of space vehicles that they intend to bid. The NRE shall include costs associated with items such as space vehicle design, development, test, and demonstration. Offers shall also provide a quote for the first plane of space vehicles for each group of space vehicles they intend to bid. This quote goes into the second row of the table. In the third row of the table, offers shall list the unit price of each additional space vehicle after the first plane. Offers should total the first two rows of the column of Group A column and the first two rows of Group B column and put that in the total price row. This price is the total bid price of the proposal. In addition to the pricing table, SDA requests that the offers provide the total price and elements of price broken down by milestones, including at a minimum the following. Price of major task by fiscal year by work breakdown structure element, level 3 or below. The work breakdown structure shall include, but not limited to, the elements shown in the sample work breakdown structure on the slide. Price breakdown by work breakdown structure element task provided SDA with an understanding of where the major development efforts lie. Number 2, a summary of projected funding requirements by month and by quarter for government fiscal year, performer fiscal year, and calendar year. SDA desires this information to enable fiscal and milestone pricing and planning. Number 3, price and percentage of price by the prime and major sum contractors. Additionally, SDA requests that the offer provide an itemization of major subcontractors. This breakdown enables SDA to understand the work share between the prime contractor and their subcontractors. Next, price by major risk and activity. This breakdown enables SDA to understand the potential risk associated with potential cost associated with the major risk. SDA also requests that the offer specifically call out the costs associated with materials and ODCs such as travel. Finally, the SDA requests that the offer provide identification of pricing assumptions which may require incorporation into the resulting award instrument, such as the use of the government-furnished property facilities and information. Next slide, please. Technical data rates and computer software. The offer shall clearly delineate any and all limitations on data, hardware, computer, software, or any other intellectual rights. Is the SDA's assumption that no hardware, technical data, or computer rights will be provided with less than full government purpose rights, and that the vast majority of the information generated will be provided with unlimited rights to the government? Should the offeror disagree that they must, if the offeror disagrees, they must clearly identify those elements to be provided with less than unlimited rights and identify the rationale for their assertions using the format in the table above. Next slide, please. Evaluation criteria. Let's talk about the evaluation methodology. This is a best value trade-off source selection conducted in accordance with the FAR subpart 15.3 and the Department of Defense source selection procedures dated 31 March 2016. The government will select up to two of the most highly rated offers that represent the overall best value to the government. The successful offerors will need to be deemed responsible in accordance with FAR subpart 9.1 as supplemented by the DFARS supplement, and proposals must conform to the solicitation's requirements to be eligible for award. While the government strives for maximum objectivity in its evaluation, the source selection process by its very nature is subjective, and therefore professional judgment is implicit throughout the entire process. The table on this slide shows the evaluation factors and subfactors which will be used to evaluate each proposal. The offers will be evaluated in five areas: schedule, technical, past performance, small business participation, and price. Each factor will be discussed in more detail in the following slides. Next slide, please. Evaluation definitions. When assessing the offer's proposal, the government will assign the following categories: significant strengths, deficiencies, weaknesses, and sufficient and significant weaknesses as defined in the table you see on your chart. Next slide. So let's talk about evaluation factor one, which is schedule. The government will assess the offer's understanding and approach in satisfying all objectives contained in the attachment, statement of work, based on information provided by the offeror and its proposal. This assessment will include the offer's ability to launch the transport space vehicles and the reasonableness and realism of the proposed schedule to meet these objectives within the period of performance. The evaluation will be based on the offeror's proposed schedule, supporting explanatory text, and identified schedule risk. These artifacts will be evaluated on their ability to demonstrate understanding of tasks and activities required to accomplish the work, sequencing of these tasks and activities, identify dependencies and other schedule relationships, identification of critical path activities, and milestones and other schedule performance criteria to manage the progress against the schedule baseline. The government will assign overall factor one, schedule rating, as described in the table above. The government will assign strengths, significant strengths, and or deficiencies to the offer's proposal to arrive at the factor one schedule rating as defined in the previous slide. Offerors receiving a factor one schedule rating of unacceptable will be ineligible for award. Next slide. Evaluation factor two, technical. The government will assess the offeror's understanding and approach in satisfying all objectives in the attachment one statement of work based on information provided by the offeror and its proposal. The government will evaluate the offeror's proposed technical approach and technical risk and their understanding and approach to satisfying the interoperability requirement as defined and evaluated in the following technical subfactors. Subfactor one is more important than subfactors two through five combined for the technical factor. Subfactors two through five are of equal importance. And let me emphasize that again. Subfactor one is more important than subfactors two through five combined. Each technical subfactor will receive a combined technical risk rating. The combined technical risk rating will include consideration of the significant strengths, their strengths, weaknesses, significant weaknesses, and deficiencies. The combined technical risk evaluation utilizes the combined technical risk ratings listed on the table on the slide. The government will assign strengths, significant strengths, and or deficiencies to the offeror's proposal to arrive at the overall factor two technical rating. Offerors receiving a factor two technical rating of unacceptable will be ineligible for award. Next slide, please. Evaluation factor three, past performance. The government will evaluate factor three based on information provided with the proposals as specified in section L of the statement of work. They may also use the following sources to evaluate past performance: CPARS, the Federal Awardee Performance and Integrity Information System, the Electronic Subcontracting Reporting System, interviews with government program managers, contracting officers, fee determining officials, and past performance questionnaires completed by government customers for whom the offeror has received previous contract awards. The government will evaluate the performance and quality of the offeror's recent, within 5 years, and relevant record of past performance as a means of asserting its ability to accomplish the Attachment 1 FOW. The government will review recent performance information obtained to determine whether past performance efforts relate to the scope of the activities described in Attachment 1, which is the FOW. The ratings defined in this table will be assigned for relevancy. Offerers that receive a Factor 3 past performance confidence rating of no confidence will be ineligible for award. Pursuant to DFAR 215.305, the evaluation will also consider the extent to which the offeror's past performance demonstrates compliance with FAR 52.218-8, utilization of small business concerns. This quality assessment may result in a positive or adverse finding. Adverse as defined as past performance information that results in any unsatisfactory rating on any formal rating system or any unfavorable comment received from sources outside without formal rating system, without the formal rating system. Based on the evaluation, the offeror will be assigned a past performance confidence rating from the list as defined in the table at the bottom of the slide. Next slide, please. Now we're talking about small business participation. The government will evaluate to the extent to which small businesses, to include service-disabled, veteran-owned small business concerns, hub-owned small business concerns, small disadvantaged business concerns, and women-owned small business concerns as identified in Attachment 4, the Small Business Participation Commitment document. Offerors must meet the minimum quantitative requirement a small business participation, which is 5% of the total proposed contract value, to include options. The small business utilization plan, if applicable, will be assessed in accordance with the FAR 19.704 and must reflect the level of small business participation specified in the Small Business Participation Commitment document. Careful consideration will be given to offerors' dependence on small business for critical technical aspects of the overall bid. The inclusion of significant engineering or technical elements from small businesses other than traditional defense and aerospace contractors is a strength. Offers that receive a Factor 4 small business participation rating of unacceptable will be ineligible for award. Next slide, please. Evaluation Factor 5, price. Because of the types, configurations, and quantities of space vehicles proposed will vary between proposals, the government will evaluate the offeror's price on a per space vehicle base. This space vehicle price will be calculated by dividing the offeror's total proposed price by the number of space vehicles proposed. Referring to the pricing table from Section L, the total price line will be divided by the number of space vehicles, which will be 7 for group offerors only, 3 for group B offerors only, or for 10 for group A and B offerors. Lower prices will be evaluated more favorably. The offeror's pricing will be evaluated for reasonableness. Proposals that are determined not to be reasonable will not be awarded. The government may use data external to the offeror's proposal, such as, but not limited to, field pricing reports, industry information, government estimates, same or similar DOD contracts, and or commercial data. Next slide, please. So now let's talk about relative importance of factors and subfactors. In accordance with FAR 15.304, when combined, factors 1 through 4 are approximately equal to factor 5 price. The non-price factors are listed in descending order of importance. This means that schedule is more important than technical, which is more important than past performance, which is more important than small business participation. The prioritization of the factors are shown on the top of the screen. Price is equal to the combination of the other factors, which are listed in order of increasing importance from right to left. Within the technical factor, subfactor 1, the overall technical solution is more important than subfactors 2 through 5 combined. Subfactors 2, 3, 4, and 5 are of equal of equal importance. This is shown at the bottom of the slide. The overall technical solution is more important than that of the other factors combined. The other factors, data rights, low latency, inter-satellite cross-links, like 16, tactical data links, networking, routing of all are equal importance. Next slide, please. So we've gone through the architecture slides. We've broken down the transport by the various layers. Once the satellites are in orbit, the SDA plans on doing a capstone event. And so what I'd like to do now is tie the capstone event to the Tranche 0 requirements that we discussed earlier to our objectives and goals. So the procurement of the initial tranche for SDAs is distributed across tracking, the transport, the BMCQ admin custody layers, but all these elements must operate together to provide a warfighting capability. SDA envisions a capstone demonstration in the first quarter of fiscal year 2023, integrating all these elements to allow the warfighter to gain familiarity with the capabilities of the architecture and to provide feedback to the larger investments of Tranche 1. To the extent feasible, the capstone event will be coordinated with other military exercises. This capstone event has two aspects, one related to tracking and the other related to custody. In the tracking aspect, the tracking layer detects and initiates the track on an advanced threat prior to cue or other knowledge. The track data, whether optical sighting messages, 2D tracks, or other products, is transmitted through the transport layer to the ground. The transport Tranche 0 ground, in concert with the relevant portions of the ballistic missile defense system enterprise, processes this data to create a correlated track. The track data is then sent to the transport network and forwarded through the tactical links to the users in the theater. This transmission timeline must be in the order of seconds to demonstrate the ability to provide timely data in support of shorter wartime and engagement timelines. The custody aspect of the capstone event is to demonstrate the ability to transmit sensor data and fuse it to the forward edge as a component of shortening long-range strike timelines. In future tranches, on-orbit sensors will be equipped with transport layer compatible cross-links, but there will be not any available during the Tranche 0 capstone event. Therefore, sensor data will be streamlined from the ground through the transport network to a platform and theater. The sensor data from multiple phenomenologies likely include both SIGINT detections and SAR or EO imagery. The data is received on the ground, which fuses it to form a track and then sends it to the theater through the tactical data links. The Tranche 0 operational goals are defined in both threshold and goal format when they've been derived from documentation contained in the statement of work. Next slide. First of all, I'd like to thank everyone for their time today. I know this is a unique approach to doing industry day, and sometimes it's laborious, but I think based on the number of questions we've already received, when it comes time in May, the product that we're going to produce with respect to the RFP will be a much better product. So on behalf of Dr. Griffin, Office of the Undersecretary of Defense Research and Engineering, and Dr. Tanier, the SDA Director, we want to thank everyone for their time today. We hope that this discussion has helped formulate a stronger foundation as to SDA's expectations. We want to strongly emphasize the SDA's goal is to seek feedback from industry. If there's ambiguity, we want to correct the ambiguity. If the RFP has conflicting information on different pages of the RFP, we want to get that corrected also. Dr. Tanier has been absolutely emphatic that the final RFP release has to be clear, it has to be concise, and it has to have identified requirements that industry can quickly address. The SDA strives to be a good steward of government representation. If you see an error in the RFP, please respond to the email in the RFP. We have set aside the week of the 13th to the 17th of April from 13 to 1700 to host industry in 30-minute blocks. There is an email provided in the draft RFP. Again, I appreciate everyone's time today, and I'll turn this back over to Jen.
Thank you, Tim, for sharing that information. And thank you to all of our speakers today for taking the time to participate in our Industry Day event. We also thank you, our participants, for sticking with us in this virtual format. We're very pleased to be able to share this information with all of you today. As Tim mentioned, we would encourage you to submit input and feedback on the draft RFP. Instructions for doing that are included in the draft RFP document as well as on ZetaSAM. If you have questions after today's event, please submit them in email via email to SDA's contracts chief, Chris Glista. We have a slide that should show his email address shortly. If we can have the next slide. And we also, if you are interested in scheduling one-on-one industry meetings with SDA, as Tim Boudreau mentioned, regarding this draft RFP, you should send an email to a general email box displayed on the bottom of that slide as well. We'll get that information to you. Finally, in the coming days and weeks, you'll receive some follow-up information from SDA. That information will include an email asking you to opt out if you do not want your contact information shared with other Industry Day participants. We will not post the information. However, we would like to share participant info with the other participants via email, and we will send you a note asking if you do not want your info shared, please opt out. We will also provide written responses to the questions that you submitted. As we mentioned, we are not doing a panel today because of the volume of questions that we received, so we will provide written responses to those questions in the coming days. We will also post a recording of this event on SDA.mil as soon as we're able to process that and post it for your reference. Again, we encourage your feedback. We will get you information about where to email follow-up questions and requests for one-on-one industry meetings. Barring any comments from SDA leadership, just giving a pause in case anyone had anything to add.
Thank you all for attending.
Okay, great. So thank you again for attending SDA's Transport Transbureau Industry Day. This concludes our event, and you may disconnect your lines at your convenience.